From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak, and we are live in the studio. North winds blew overnight, as they were forecast to do. The wildfire danger continues to be high, and the public safety power outages, as they are called, continue today. Power is being restored to some PG&E customers who were without it since yesterday or even the night before. The same is the case with Southern California Edison customers. Let's start the hour with the latest from the California Office of Emergency Services. Brian May, Public Information Officer for Cal OES, is on the phone. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Are we in an emergency situation now on Thursday morning?
I wouldn't necessarily describe it as an emergency situation. What I would describe it is just very high risk, and we at the state level are looking at situations up and down the state. We obviously focus a lot on Northern California, but we've got these Santa Ana winds picking up in Southern California later today. They'll be doing some shutoffs, power shutoffs down in Southern Cal later today. So we're just looking at everything across the state, trying to identify vulnerabilities and issues that may come up.
What part of the state, then, is most at risk today?
Well, for the morning hours, it's still Northern California. In the Bay Area, we saw winds of 70, 75 miles an hour. Those will start to shift down south. I heard you mention some numbers earlier. PG&E is already starting to return power to some customers. I think the latest number that I saw from PG&E was about 615,000 customers, and that's after some restoration took place in Humboldt County.
I realize that you had a 7 a.m. briefing. What details from that can you share with us?
From a state level, the good news was the briefing was it was relatively quiet. Again, these power outages are happening because we have incredibly dangerous fire conditions, the worst fire conditions we've seen over the last 2 years, and we know how bad the weather has been over the last 2 years. So the good news with the briefing was it was relatively quiet. There were some small fires that started up. I think the most dangerous one was in Moraga. It was very close to some buildings, but they jumped on that very quickly. The fact that we don't have a large wildfire burning right now is incredibly good news because we have resources available. We've pre-positioned about 25 teams across the state. They're not battling a large fire right now. They're ready to go should something pop up.
Many people think that the decision to have power or not have power solely sits within the utility companies. Could you explain the chain of process or decision making that has to happen for power in any area to be restored?
Well, I know we work in collaboration with PG&E. They're embedded within here at OES. We also work, obviously, very close with the National Weather Service here as well and CAL FIRE. So for the restoration process, I know PG&E has to inspect these lines. The numbers that I've seen, they've got about 6,300 people on the ground that are ready to start inspecting. That inspection can't begin until the wind event is over. They obviously can't go out while it's still happening. But as soon as the winds die down, they're going to send their crews out. They also have 45 helicopters that they have to inspect these lines. We're talking about a massive amount. I mean, we're talking about the amount of lines that have been de-energized could circle around the earth right now. So there's a lot to inspect, but as soon as the winds die down, they'll start that process.
Key to all this, then, is the weather, obviously, but then the National Weather Service, right?
Every briefing, Beth, that we do begins with the National Weather Service, and it doesn't really matter what type of event we're talking about, whether it's a wildfire, a flood, tsunamis on the coast. Every briefing that we have begins with the National Weather Service because weather is so key to what we do, which reminds us all just to stay vigilant. We may start seeing power being turned on again, but we still have incredibly high wildfire dangers outside right now. We all need to take care and make sure that we're not going to cause anything.
I feel like I've hit the high points that we've been thinking about and we've been asked about, Brian. Is there anything else in this scenario that has been really top of the priority list from your perspective that out of Cal OES we should know and be aware of?
You know, I think we take this opportunity to remind us all as Californians, we live in a beautiful state, but California is the most disaster-prone state in the nation, and it's a good reminder for all of us. Stay on top of plans. Make sure that you discuss with your family where you would go if you have to leave somewhere. And now's a good reminder, keep the gas tanks full. If you're an energy car, if you're a power car, a battery-powered car, make sure that battery stays charged. I don't, for myself, I don't walk around with a lot of cash these days. You may not be able to use your debit card if your power is shut off, so have some cash on hand and enough food and water for your family to get through for about 72 hours. Just let's all be ultra aware right now until we can get out of these fire conditions.
All right, Brian, thanks so much for making time for us today.
You're welcome, Beth.
That is Brian May, PIO for Cal OES, and you can follow the changing situation at capradio.org. By the way, you can also continue to reach out to us with questions. In the studio with me now are ATC anchor Randall White and digital producer Emily Zentner. Hi to both of you.
Beth, good to see you.
I think people couldn't imagine how much you've been fielding through your computers the last couple days. You've been part of Cap Radio's effort to manage the questions and research the answers for listeners. So what's being asked most often, Emily?
The question we've gotten most is, this is my address, am I going to be impacted by these outages? And unfortunately, PG&E's website has been kind of up and down over the past 2 days, so that's not been a super reliable place for people to get information.
I'd say more down than up.
Yeah,
and
more
down than up. Supposedly launched a new one last night.
They did. So that's been up for a little bit. I haven't gotten a chance to explore it that much. But if there continues to be PG&E website problems, we do actually have a map of the impacted areas on our website. So you can head to capradio.org. There's a little magnifying glass button where you can search your address and see if you're going to be impacted by the outage.
Anecdotally, in the newsroom, we've had people that have had problems with the new website. I just tried it before we came on the show and was able to use it efficiently. Yeah. But I really think this website issue is going to be a problem moving forward, that PG&E could not foresee the number of people that were going to access their website. They told me yesterday, Brandy Merlot, the spokeswoman for PG&E, told me that they did bolster what do they need, Emily, for that to
server
work?
Power.
The server
yes.
power. Yeah, they bolstered the server power, but not by nearly enough to handle the traffic that they saw.
You just led nicely into the next question, which is that we're hearing 500,000 customers or 700,000 customers, up to 2 million customers. But how many people does that represent? And how many individuals actually are impacted, Emily?
So that word customer, according to PG&E, actually represents about 3 people. So if you take that into account, and we have about 700,000 customers so-called impacted, it's going to be about 200 million or about 2 million people, excuse me, who could be impacted by these power outages.
Okay. So to both of you, This outage has been frustrating. I received an email this morning from someone who said, "Yeah, I'm irritated. My power went off at about 3:30 this morning and the highest wind in air quotes there that I've seen all day is 6 miles per hour." So there's some agitation. Is that coming through in the questions you've been asked?
Absolutely, Emily, right? There have been numerous questions where people are upset, wondering why their area was shut down when it doesn't appear to have the power lines are underground and such. The problem is when PG&E pulls power on an area, sometimes they can choose to do it several different ways. They can do it at the circuit level, which can just be a block, or they can do it on a much wider range. And PG&E has chosen to do the much wider range for much of this. They have done it at the circuit level in some areas, but so you might be part of one of those larger swath areas where your area really isn't getting much wind, but maybe just a mile or two down the road where it's more of a canyon situation, the winds are really whipping and you're part of the same general power switch.
Yeah, and I think especially with those website issues, people are really frustrated because they can't get information. So they're trying to plan, they're trying to figure things out. And when they Google PG&E power shut off and click on the PG&E site, maybe they can't get to it. And we've gotten a lot of that on social media as we post information. Mm-hmm. We've heard from a lot of listeners who are just really upset because they're trying to plan their lives around this power outage and they haven't been able to do that, I think.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the calm way that you two continue to deal with people as you either get the message online or talk to them. What else are our listeners asking, Randall?
Well, they've asked us directly, when is their power going to be turned back on, as though we have the switch.
Yeah.
But as we heard from OES right there, there are a lot of lines. Beth, you and I both looked at each other when he said that the amount of cable that needs to be inspected could wrap around the planet.
Right.
And I was, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that much. I knew it was a lot. So PG&E will go out and visually inspect. They have helicopters. They have the 6,000 people on the ground. There's no California law that says they have to do that. But I did speak with the CPUC yesterday, the Public Utilities Commission, who oversees PG&E. Mm-hmm. And they told me they are required to safely operate their equipment. And if that's how PG&E chooses to turn the power back on, then they're allowed to do that. And so that is how PG&E has chosen to do this. And you can see why that would make sense.
Emily, I know you're being asked about situations where there might be a medical need. And do those people have any option other than buying and installing a generator? Is there any other idea here?
Unfortunately, it seems like getting a generator is the simplest solution, but that is expensive. And then you have to get, you know, maybe gas to fuel the generator. And PG&E actually recommended that people who need electricity for medical needs, keeping medicine cool, using like a home oxygen machine, that they just need to plan ahead for these, which can be frustrating advice for people because they want a solution. They don't just want to be told, plan for this. So one solution is that PG&E does have resource centers open where you can go and maybe charge a portable medical device if you need to. And we have a list of those on the site as well. But for people who need a refrigerator, need to be able to plug in those medical machines, there's not a great solution outside of a generator.
And many of us don't have that level of disposable income that we could just jump out there and do that. And if you were listening to Morning Edition an hour ago, there was a heartbreaking story of a woman in the Sausalito area who had just gone to, I don't know, Costco or one of those big stores and purchased $450 worth of food that will now go bad.
You know, it's one reality to think about packing a bag in case of emergency or knowing where you'll meet outside of your house. It's another entirely to think about, where am I going to plug in my portable oxygen machine?
Yeah.
Where am I going to charge my phone in case I lose electricity? All right. So, Randall, let's talk about a question involving travel. What are you being asked?
Getting around. People were wondering if it would affect major roadways. For instance, the Caldecott Tunnel in the Bay Area is a major artery between the far East Bay and the Oakland-Berkeley area. Caltrans rallied and kept the lights on there with generators. There was initially a plan to shut down the Caldecott, which would have been a really big deal, and it would have made the 80 corridor an absolute mess during the commute. But on a more localized level, when an intersection goes dark, that becomes a four-way stop. And Emily and I were somewhat laughing in the newsroom that the fact that we actually have to tell people how to do that, because it is one of the questions when you take the DMV test.
Remember to yield to the right,
right,
or whoever arrives first.
For people to remember that. So we do want to underscore that if you come up to a dark intersection, treat it as a four-way stop. The other thing people were wondering was about airports. And Sacramento County has not been impacted, so we're fine at the airport there. San Francisco International, or SFO, Oakland, and San Jose have all reported that they have backup generators should they be affected, and that it's business as usual at those airports.
Emily, Randall mentioned food spoiling in the refrigerator. Have there been other questions along that line?
Yeah, we had people asking us, would they be reimbursed for the food that they lost during this? And, you know, one of the things with the power outage is, you know, I grew up having power outages, and I remember my mom telling us, you know, don't open the refrigerator. We have to keep all the cold stuff in there still cold. But when you have the power out for a few days, you can lose all of the food in your fridge and refrigerator. And PG&E is not reimbursing for that with these outages. So they will not be giving the customers who are affected by this any money to remediate that lost food. And that's hard because, as Randall pointed out, not everyone can afford to just go and replace all of the food that they've been storing in their fridge. That can be a big expense.
And sometimes that includes medicines like insulin that needs to be kept cold.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're hearing Randall White and Emily Zentner from our CAP Radio News team. They're talking through answers to questions we've received from you about the public safety power outages. We're going to go through a few more questions, and then we will explain how you can ask anything else about the situation that we don't answer or that might apply to your situation. So, more questions, Randall. What are you being asked?
Well, a lot of people want to know, why doesn't PG&E just put the power lines underground? That would solve everything. And, you know, to some degree, it would. But when you've got enough lines to wrap around the planet,
the Earth, yes.
It becomes a very expensive endeavor. More expensive than, you know, the costs of lives and property that we saw in Paradise and in the North Bay. People could argue over that. But PG&E says it is $3 million to convert 1 mile of overhead power lines into underground lines. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine just 1 mile and then multiply that by $3 million. Brandy Merlot, who I spoke to with PG&E, says that power lines are vulnerable to earthquakes and flooding and some other things that we might not think about.
If they're underground.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then when there is a problem with the line, finding where that problem is a lot more difficult because they're obscured by soil and rock and what have you. So, but they are considering it in some areas where it might make sense. Paradise, for instance, is one area that when they rebuild, they can put the power lines underground.
Okay, Emily, what else is everybody asking?
We kind of touched on this earlier. People were really confused if they were in an area that wasn't affected by high winds or an area where they do have those underground lines and they're still getting shut off. So I would say, you know, underscoring that, because we've gotten that a lot, it is dependent on how PG&E is shutting things down. And so sometimes you're just in that region and you get shut down with it. And we've gotten a lot of frustration from people over that, understandably.
Okay. We've been talking about PG&E and Southern California Edison as the utilities that are doing the shutdowns. I am guessing that people are calling saying, what about SMUD?
They are.
Am I going to be affected if I'm a SMUD customer?
I reached out to SMUD yesterday afternoon and was told that no, they're not planning any shutoffs. And they are not dependent on PG&E for their power. So if some of these lines might have been feeder lines that would come in for SMUD, it's not going to affect any of the SMUD customers. But I should say, in terms of Southern California Edison, I looked it up just before we came on, and up until just recently, there had been no customers affected. They have started shutting off power. There are three customers in Southern California that are affected. San Diego's power company at this moment has not initiated any power cutoffs.
All right. This is not the end of the questions. So for people who want to ask more, how do they reach you? How do they reach our newsroom?
They can go to capradio.org/insight, and if they click on the page for this segment, there's a little form at the bottom of the page, and they can send us their questions there, and Randall and I will see if we can answer them.
I think this has been so informative and so valuable. Thank you so much, and thank you, Randall, for checking everything right before we got here and for the communication with everybody. I think it's truly a public service, and I've been learning sitting here listening to you.
Well, we're happy to do it. I mean, and the our listeners, when they interact with us, you can tell that they're happy that we're taking their questions. So,
yeah.
All right. You can hear Randall this afternoon during ATC with updates to the current situation. You won't hear Emily, but she'll be sitting there tapping away. And on the computer, you'll see her on our digital presence. Emily Zentner, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Beth.
And we'll have continuing coverage of the outages and any wildfire situations that might come up at capradio.org. Up next, we're going to continue on this topic as Ben Adler joins me for this week's Capital Chat. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.